Good afternoon, everyone. The title of my talk today is What's Space Ever Done For Me? And you'll see I've included this little cartoon of the old codger who says, you know, fully on space exploration. What's it ever done for me? And by the end of this talk, we're going to find out what space exploration has actually done for our little cartoon character. Now, most people, when they, if you ask them, you know, what's come out of space exploration, they'll tell you Tang Teflon fry pans, Velcro and space pens and space food sticks. But the truth of the matter is only one of those is actually a product of space research. Do you know which one? Sorry? The pen? No, that's an interesting thing. A lot of people think NASA paid, there's an urban myth that NASA paid a huge amount of money to have the space pen developed. And in fact, a chap by the name of Paul C. Fisher took it upon himself for his own business interest to develop a pen that could write not only underwater but at any angle and was therefore suitable for writing in space. No, strange as it might seem, the only one of these that was actually developed directly by the space program was the space food sticks. Tang actually was a drink invented in the 50s, but it was used in the Mercury and Gemini missions. Teflon was actually developed back in the 30s, but again, NASA used it in spacesuits, in heat shields, various other insulation. But they used it in a variety of ways throughout the space program. So again, all of these things got a big boost from being associated with it, but they were not space products. Of course, NASA did love Velcro quite a bit. The Velcro was originally used on the Apollo spacesuits. I don't know if you can just see there, these are actually Velcro tabs that were designed to hold the tools while the astronauts were in the Apollo spacecraft and also were working on the moon. But after that, NASA became very fond of Velcro, and you'll find it everywhere. If you can see this this astronaut on the International Space Station, he's got Velcro tabs all along his pants so that he can stick his equipment and his notes to all these little tools that come out of this toolbox. Again, they're wrapped in Velcro. They've all got little Velcro tabs on them. The dinner plates have Velcro tabs so that your cutlery doesn't float away. There's nothing worse than having your cutlery and or your dinner floating off in the distance while you're trying to eat. And I rather love this. This is Catherine Nyberg, who was an astronaut on the International Space Station. And she was a quilter, and so she actually had made for her or made herself a lovely quilting mat out of Velcro. So as you can see, NASA loves Velcro, but they didn't invent it. However, NASA did give the world quite a lot of important innovations that have, in particular ways, gone quite a long way towards changing our society. And the most obvious example of that is the communication satellite. Originally developed by NASA, these days we can get, you know, we can get live breaking news from any part of the world. We can have live interviews with people in any part of the world. If you've got your, you know, with your smartphone, you can communicate to anybody anywhere around the world. And of course, you don't have to wait for things to screen in America and come to Australia 3 months or 6 months later. You can now get them straight away. So communication satellites have been the most successful product of space technology, and certainly the most commercially successful product. Now, you may not know that, in fact, the idea of the communication satellite was first promoted by Arthur C. Clarke, the science fiction writer. And back in 1945, he published an article where he showed that with only three satellites in a very particular orbit, which is known as geostationary orbit, at 36,000 kilometres above the Earth, if you've got three satellites in that orbit, you'll be able to provide radio coverage of the entire Earth, because at that particular height, the satellites are travelling at the same, in their orbit, the same speed that the Earth is turning below them. So they appear to actually be stationary above that particular spot on the Earth. And that means that we can now literally be in contact no matter where we are, whether we're in the Arctic or the Antarctic or the desert or wherever. And as communication satellite technology is developed, we're now able to communicate with aircraft, fixed terminals, ships, submarines, any kind of transportable device, you can go anywhere and you will have access to telephone communication. The very first communication satellite was this little baby. This is Telstar. This was launched in 1962. And here, I might add, is a lady who does understand and appreciate technology, even if our old codger didn't. But the very first satellite broadcast out of Australia was in 1966, and that was a program called Down Under Comes Up Live. And what's so interesting about that particularly is that it was only one way because of a particular... It's actually a launch failure that put a satellite into a very specific orbit that enabled Australia to send a signal via satellite to the UK, but it wasn't possible to get a return signal. So that very first program out of Australia was one way. But it was the start of Australia being linked to the world via satellite. And from the mid-60s on, there's an enormous growth in satellite technology. You may not be aware now, but the very first global link via satellite was in 1967, and it was a program that was called Our World. It was broadcast literally around the world with material provided by six or seven different countries, including Australia. And for those of you who are Beatles fans, it was this program for which the Beatles wrote All You Need Is Love. And they actually performed it live. This is some very poor footage, but it's the only thing I could find to show you of the Beatles performing live on Our World. Having that satellite communication drew the world closer together. It's often said that the world became a global village. Suddenly we could see what was happening in countries that in some cases we'd never heard of before. It's very often said now that being able to see the reports from the Vietnam War directly on television via satellite was a very important turning point in support for that war, not only in the United States, but in Australia and other countries as well. And since that time, the power of television and the power of live satellite communications has really changed the world in many ways. That immediate worldwide connectivity that we've got now with satellites, with the internet, with our smart devices, they're all linked up by fibre optics and satellites, and they're producing global change, at a social change and globalisation at a very rapid rate. And now, in fact, we need to think whether or not is this a good thing or is this perhaps not a good thing. There are, quite a number of, obviously, on the economic side, a lot of people think that globalisation is good for trade, but it could result, get my tongue around that, could result in a lot of changes to cultures, to politics, and, of course, globalisation of trade can actually lead to environmental changes in different countries. One of the interesting things that's often complained about in regard to the dominance of Western media through the communications media is that many countries, particularly many minority groups, are losing contact with their cultural heritage. And yet, at the same time, we have groups like many of the Aboriginal communities in Central Australia, Indigenous groups in other parts of the world that are actually using satellites now to retain and develop their culture. So they're using satellite communications into remote areas to broadcast in their language and to broadcast cultural programs to young people to help revive their cultures. So there's a two-way street. Satellites, of course, have actually been very, very important in distance education. You all know about the school of the air, but these days they're no longer using radio, they're using satellite technology, so that you can actually have your classroom literally in a field as long as you have your satellite phone with you. And India is a very interesting example of, they were one of the first adopters of using satellite technology for mass public education. In a country where in the 1970s particularly, there were very few schools in regional areas, many poor communities simply didn't have access to higher education. And so they began a program putting satellite receivers and a local television receiver into each community so that educational programs could be directly broadcast. And that's something which is now huge in India. China does a lot of work in broadcasting education programs to remote areas, and it's quite widely used around the Pacific as well. So, another thing that satellites, particularly communication satellites, enable us to do is telemedicine. And if you've never heard of it, essentially telemedicine is medicine via satellite. So that you have a health worker, perhaps in a remote region, who's outfitted with a kit, possibly like this one you see here, which can actually, it's a satellite phone combined with a small medical kit. And this can send information back to a doctor or a specialist in one of the big city areas, and they can provide further detail based on the readings from the different measurement devices that are sent to the doctor. So this is doing particularly important work in Africa now with telemedicine. They've got a lot of nurses who go out, community nurses who can go out to small regional areas, and just with one of these they can set up a small clinic and put the people in the village directly in contact with doctors back in the major cities. And of course it's widely used in Northern Australia in Aboriginal communities, and again in a lot of other remote regions of the world. And of course, these days you all know that your phone comes with a GPS receiver. Your car might have a GPS as well. It's become so ubiquitous for us, we almost don't think about the fact that GPS is another satellite technology. It actually began as a navigation technology for the United States military, and it works through a constellation of, I think it's now about 24 satellites that are orbiting around the Earth, so that four or five will constantly be in view of anyone at any particular time. And because of that, using the signals from the satellites, the receiver on the ground can actually triangulate your exact position. And as we know, GPS is very useful for finding your way around, but it's very useful for a lot of other things as well. And these are things you may not actually think about. GPS has a lot of use in agriculture now, both for helping farmers at present plough their fields to get their maximum yield so that they can actually plough right up to the limits of their fields. And in the future, GPS will be able to be used to guide smart tractors or smart reapers so that you won't even need a driver, just like the driverless car, which will also rely on GPS. These farm implements will be able to steer themselves around the field, being driven specifically by GPS. The world financial system now would actually fall apart if it were not for GPS, because all international transactions of funds are all time-stamped. Every time you go to an ATM, take money out, that's time-stamped using GPS. And so that way the global financial system can keep track of where money is at all times, where it's being transferred to. And if there's ever any questions about anything, it can all be tracked back via the digital timestamps of GPS. Surveyors, builders, infrastructure development, they all rely on GPS in different ways to help in getting the correct locations for the different structures that they're working on, bridges, whatever, pipelines. They all use GPS these days. And in fact, in a lot of countries where they have earthquake problems, they can now use GPS to actually monitor the movement of faults. So along, for example, the San Andreas fault, which is quite famous, there are actually a set of monitors that use GPS to actually monitor how that fault is moving, how it's slipping, and they hope that that will be able to help them in predicting the possibility of another major earthquake. This is something you may not be aware particularly, and it's one of my favourite uses of GPS, in fact, is any movie you see now that uses CGI. This is a scene from Avatar 2. So, you know, we have our live actors. They work against their green screen and the computer artists are going to put in all that other footage later, but how do they know the exact angles? How do they know how the character, how the live action people were standing or relating to each other in the physical space? Because the cameras are fitted with GPS, so that they know exactly what angle and exactly what location every camera was. And that way they can relate all the footage of the actors that was filmed in the computer and create seamless imagery. Thank you. Seamless imagery for the cinema. So, you know, just a few uses of GPS you may not have actually thought of.
Some of the things that it has done.